Awesome date. February 22nd, 2010. Awesome topic.
Webcomics Roundtable.
This is the Awesome Cast. Folks, and welcome once back, once more, to the Awesome Cast. Momentarily, I'm Basil.
And I'm Eric.
And that's us. For now.
For now. Well, I'll actually still be here, but Basil won't.
This is actually going to be a very, very interesting Awesome Cast. Something completely different, brand new experiments being done, so experimental that I wasn't even allowed to be involved in it. Not that I'm bitter.
No, I'm not bitter, not at all. No, this particular episode is a webcomics roundtable. We've gathered together some former and current webcomic artists and writers and set them up with a moderator and just thrown questions at them and see where it led. So it was pretty good. I was on there, Nobody's on there, and Susan, Lear and Susan are on here. And I think you've met everybody before.
Yeah, they're all Awesome Cast members.
Yeah, they're all Awesome Cast members, so yeah.
Sadly, I never got to be a webcomic person, so they're like, well, you've never done a webcomic? I'm like, oh, well, maybe I haven't. Maybe it was a fever dream I had once.
Well,
turns out it was.
If this works, and if there's actually anybody listening out there in podcast land, let us know if you like this style of Awesome Cast. We'll bring it back. We'll gather maybe everybody who's played Mass Effect and bring up a moderator and have them argue over Paragon and Renegade or something. Or, you know, it's just Mass Effect's just what I'm thinking about right now because they just beat it, but etc.
So, of course, there's the usual things. First, the website, awesomecast.com. Check out the Index of Awesome. Leave comments in the comments section. You can always email us, awesomecast@gmail.com. Send us emails. I check it every day. You will not get unheard. Yes, including you, person who said that you want to hear your voice from the really real, real OhioCon experience. That'll probably be the next thing that goes up, actually, so we actually get that out there. And then we'll probably actually do real podcasts again, and not just these random experiments and con trips.
So, yeah, I think, what did we decide what our next one is? Is Mass Effect? Is that what we're...
Well, it's going to be, we're doing another roundtable.
Another roundtable.
Type thing. For the best animes of the aughts.
That's right, for the best anime of the aughts.
Because we're going to be the actual anime podcast. It's the last person to talk about the best animes of the decade. Yeah, you heard me, Anime World Order. We're going to do it after you.
We're even later than you are.
That's right. Because that's how you keep it real on the streets.
Yeah, we're as late as a cheerleader after prom.
On the internet. She's probably playing WoW.
That's right.
Anyways, and after that, we'll probably do one on Mass Effect 2, since...
Yeah, probably do one on Mass Effect 2.
Because you were still going, I don't like Mass Effect when we did the first one.
Eric is totally fucking obsessed with Mass Effect. So, there you go. This is my public mea culpa right here. Is that Basil was always trying to get me to play Mass Effect. And I was like, I don't want to play that shit. I don't want to play that. Screw that. It's probably terrible. And no, Mass Effect. I sat down and played Mass Effect 1. Burned through it in 20-something hours. Immediately ran out and bought Mass Effect 2, burned through it in 40-something hours. And when I say burned through it, I mean did everything. Yeah.
So, you know, in fact, if you'd like to hear us talk about Mass Effect, we did a podcast on it. It was actually our last, quote-unquote, real podcast. And you can find that, again, in the Index of Awesome.
Oh, we did? That was real recent.
Yeah.
I thought that was a real old podcast.
No, that's like, that was just, like, January.
Yeah.
Like, we recorded in December, but, I mean... But yeah, and also this actually webcomics thing is a little old now. It was done, what, November?
God, October.
October, yeah. This is sort of a,
this is very old.
A blast from the past.
I do apologize for that. Essentially, what happened is Audacity crashed after the first 20 minutes, 15 minutes, and we couldn't recover it, sort of. Essentially, what we did manage to recover was about 129 separate 20-second clips of, you know, I'm sure that doesn't mathematically add up, but it was over 120 little clips, and they had to be manually edited back together one at a time. And I was doing finals, and then I kind of got lazy, and then I finally edited them all together, and so here it is.
So if you notice any weird audio abnormalities, that's why, because things... Eric had to edit all this all by hand, more or less.
After about 15 to 16 minutes, I think it's gone. I think I said 20 just a second ago, but I think it's only actually about 15 minutes. And it's not too bad. There's a couple of skips, essentially, like a skipping record every once in a while.
So you may not want to start this out in the car, but you could probably finish it out in the car.
Yeah, exactly.
If that's where you listen to podcasts, I have no clue what you people do. Crazy people.
Crazy webcomic, I mean, podcast people. I guess you're probably webcomic people, too, if you're on the internet. But there you go. Do we have anything, you know, World of Awesome-like? Any announcements? Any anything like that?
Not really. I mean, there's stuff going on, but we'll cover that eventually. Nothing crazy.
I would like to take 1 second to... we all live here in Huntsville, Alabama. I don't know if I'm giving away information I shouldn't, but whatever. And as many of you may know, we've had a really bad tragedy happen here recently on the UAH campus and University of Alabama campus. And if everybody out there, I don't care what your beliefs are, whatever, could give a second, you know, to give your thoughts and your good feelings and your good energy to the people at UAH, we'd really appreciate it, because I think most of us are students on UAH's campus, and it's, you know, just needs to be done. So.
For locally, February has been a really violent month
for us on campuses. Yeah, we've had a middle school shooting, which is probably not nationally publicized the way the UAH affair was. We've, of course, had this thing down at UAH. So just, you know, if you could just give some good vibes, some thoughts, some prayers to the people at UAH, it would be really appreciated.
And think twice before you marry that kid in the D&D club.
Oh, yeah. You just had to get the D&D shot in there.
Just a little bit.
So I guess that's everything. And without further ado, we give you the webcomics of the Round Table.
Narrated by King Arthur, or Eric.
You just had to get the last word.
We had an old cartoon show that had Eric and
No, we don't talk about the Eric character from the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon show.
No, the one where it was like the guy going back in Camelot, the football player who went back in time, the time of King Arthur and the Round Table. His other name was also Eric.
I don't remember that one. I remember the one where the cowardly guy that was the Cavalier or whatever was on the Dungeons & Dragons ride and got sent back, but I don't remember the other one.
Oh, well, there was a football show where the guy who decided Will Excalibur was actually a football player, and he got transported to the land of King Arthur. I'm pretty sure his name was also Eric. So,
well, then, I'm not familiar with that one.
Anyways, webcomics.
Oh, yeah, webcomics. Hot and saucy, Texas style.
Well, more like Alabama style, I mean.
Now, let's begin to type some words. Word.
Yo, when I hit it, shift O to the quote and then dollar. If you know the dir of the nerdcore rhyme, you holler. I hit L, shift O to the quote and then dollar. If you know the dir of the nerdcore rhyme, you holler. I hit L, shift O to the quote and then dollar. If you know the dir of the nerdcore rhyme, you holler.
Nerd ho, warm the mic up. Yo, we bout to strike up this band of nebbishes to cultivate nebulous fetishes. The FPS, RPG, or MM. Session to blather over my blog or BBS. Step and possess home thy geekishness. Your frame rate and frags today both impress. And yes, your affinity for a certain sight of some amusement. A classically adorned parlor of fun where you let loose pent up set pieces to partake of flicker dramas. Get you branded a sniper.
All right.
Hey, everybody. Oh, whoops. Jinx, now she can't talk for the rest of the podcast. So, now the three of us who can talk.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is the Webcomics Awesome Cast of Webcomic Talking Shop. I will be your moderator, Suze, and I guess first of all we're gonna go around, I guess, clockwise and have everybody introduce ourselves. Y'all may remember me from the last horrible webcomics thing. I am the creator of Reliquary, which is on Comic Genesis. That's R-E-L-I-Q-U-A-R-Y at comicgenesis.com. No, .comicgenesis.com. Nobody's going to visit my site! Next.
We'll put a link up on the... All right,
I'm Lee, you know, long-time contributor, all that crap. And I was also on that last one, and Hazard's Wake. May as well put a link up. I'm going to just leave it at that.
My name is Eric White. I'm also a longtime contributor to the Awesome Cast, and I was the writer and co-creator of Counterculture. Some of our archives are actually still up at counterculture.comic/whatever the Comic Genesis URL is.
Yeah, it'd be counterculture.comicgen.com.
Yeah.
And I'm Doug, and I had a webcomic way back in the day, yep. Which I do not believe any of the archives are up anymore.
They've all been shut to hell.
But I was up back when Keen Space was in its heyday, so that should tell you how long ago that was.
Duck's our old school guy here.
Yeah, Keen Space is Comic Genesis from back in the day, right?
Yeah.
That's their name.
Yeah, when I started, it was still Keen Space, but they decided that they had Keen Spot for their official thing, and they got pissed that the amateur thing kept going, "Oh, I've seen Keen Spot. You know, it's just no dummies, that's Keen Space, that's the amateur hour. God, we're so pissed.
Yeah.
We're gonna call it Comic Genesis now so people won't get this shit confused."
And now it's known as the womb that creates horrible, horrible things, which is pretty much standard operating procedure for any free thing.
Yeah, it is the internet, so.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty funny. I had never heard that story, that they they changed the name in order to distance their own service from the people using it.
Yep. Yes. Yep, that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
See, I remember my comic was like, when I was running it, it would be in the top 10 every now and then, but it typically usually fell like 12 or 13, mm-hmm. like, of the top 100 of Keen Space comics. So it was moderately successful in its day, but this was in the day when everybody and their brother had a webcomic. So
yesterday?
Not like now.
The cool kids are allowed to
Only the cool kids have webcomics now.
Ever since they banned all the idiots from the internet, it's been a lot better.
Man, I wish.
Okay, so, let's see. I've been doing my thing for a few months now. I think it actually officially started sometime around January or February this year, but I've been steadily updating since then, so... Also, I have a degree in comics from Savannah College of Art and Design, so that means I'm allowed to talk out of my ass.
I attended a lot of the same classes when we were in high school together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we both took comic classes together, so...
So that's... Yeah. That's my credentials.
We're grizzled veterans.
Oh, yeah. Credentials.
I've been webcomicking for about 6 years now, but my early stuff is horrendous. So
yeah,
I don't know how much that counts.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Like, you look at his comic, like the comics that he's producing now compared to the comics he was originally producing, and you can see light years.
Whoa. Well, I mean, just showing my cousins some of my work one time, they're like, "This is kind of okay." And then they saw one of my older ones, like, "Did a 10-year-old draw this, Lee? Was this a 10-year-old?" I'm like, "No, it's me 3 or 4 years ago." "Oh, I could have sworn it was a 10-year-old." But yeah, my early stuff is bad, but I've been chugging it out for a while, so.
How long was, your comic?
Counterculture?
Counterculture, yes.
Counterculture ran for about two and a half years. It, at its peak, had about 6,000 daily readers.
Ooh, that is powerful.
So, let's see. Was a great experience. And so that's kind of my credentials. I've actually put a lot of other stuff on the internet as well, but nothing that was actually successful or worth looking for. So please don't. God, if you find any of those old UT Sprite comics, burn them. I think I'm the only writer, like, pure writer, excuse me. Yeah. I don't want to insult them. I'm not trying to insult anybody. I'm the
artist
only...
writer. What are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I think we've got three dual classes in me.
So
I'm the one that needs the crutch.
Yeah. Now having done our credentials and told y'all why you should be maybe listening to us, what was everybody's motivation behind starting out a webcomic?
Well, mine was, I like to tell jokes, and, I also hate retail, and had all these little, little stories about, terrible things happening at my job, and I was telling them to someone on the internet, and it just sort of grew out of that. I had just met a really wonderful artist, named, Carissa. I won't give her last name, just in case she has, like, a stalker show up at her door or something. And, anyway, was telling her those, and she's like, well, I want to do a comic, and so it just kind of...
From there went to the...
From there, you know, I just wanted to make people laugh.
I started to do a webcomic because ever since I was a small child, I've always come up with stories.
Mm.
And I've always felt that my stories are pretty good, and I felt that if I was able to sit around a campfire and tell people my stories like a bard back in ye olden days, I would make a pretty sweet living at it, because I'm pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
However, when I go to write these stories down, something gets lost in the translation between spoken word and written language, and I suck horribly at it. But I discovered that my art wasn't half bad. So I figured I could use comics to tell the stories that I wanted to tell. I say that as my motivation, but that's my motivation into getting into comics. Mm-hmm. Because my actual comic was pretty much a joke-a-day comic.
Mm.
And I did that one mostly because you have to start from somewhere.
Exactly.
Everybody wants to do the big, overarching, this is a massive story going on comic, but if you don't know that you have the ability to do that just yet, a good way to sort of test yourself is to do a joke comic where you make a couple of jokes, and the challenge I presented was that I tried to make a joke every day while at the same time having each comic build up
on a continuous story. Yeah,
on a continuous storyline.
Which I think is a pretty good technique for episodic comic with a story, because you have to make sure that there's a reason for the audience to come and pay attention to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I started out kind of like Doug. It was like always doing the story crap, and I think I just gravitated toward comicry because I think in terms of images and dialogue and plot, less than in prose, and also because I'm way too finicky and not trusting other people to do anything like teaming up to do directing. So comics is how it went. And yeah, I just picked one of the bajillion stories that are always clamoring for attention in my head and stuck with that. And that seems to work so far.
Mm. Mine's not a whole lot different. I've always been thinking up stories and doing crazy stuff like wanting to make role-playing games and shit like that. And I just had a whole bunch of ideas floating around and said, what can I do with it? And I've always liked comics, even though I haven't always been the biggest into them. And I was around when the whole the webcomic scene started, and of course, just as the idle watcher, going around looking at stuff like Penny Arcade and Mega Tokyo. And ashamedly, yes, in the beginning, I actually liked Mega Tokyo before it crumbled.
Well, I do think that's something that, I don't think any of us have mentioned, but, you know, mm-hmm. I do see a lot of people who start making a webcomic. One of the reasons they start making a webcomic is because they read all these other webcomics, they enjoy these webcomics, mm-hmm. and they sort of kind of sit back to themselves and think, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a webcomic, and, you know, some of them have been vastly successful with this, because it turned out, yes, they
could
do that.
Some people can.
And some people cannot, but...
If I could break in, I forgot to mention this on my part, but I actually originally did not see the web as a really viable format for me, mostly because most of the comics that I saw were kind of joke-a-day things.
Mm-hmm.
But getting more and more into the nuts and bolts of things like self-publishing and also understanding my own artistic scheduling and limitations, I realized that publishing something on the web would give me the audience that I need to actually keep working on something, because if I don't have anybody else expecting something from me, I get lazy.
Yeah. Well, that is the best thing that doing a webcomic does, at least in my opinion, is it makes you think, well, I don't feel like writing today, I don't feel like drawing today, I don't feel like doing it today, but if I don't do it today, there's all these people that are going to know I didn't do it.
And so it
keeps
it.
You on a schedule, which keeps you doing it, which keeps you practicing, which keeps you honing your craft, whether it be dialogue or drawing or whatever you're doing on there.
Exactly.
Anyway, you were saying about...
But yes, it was pretty much a way for me to get my stories and ideas, and I love characters, which if you read my comic, you'll see that I've crammed way too many in there. And it's a mess. But you know, I'm keeping with it because people will actually read it. So, but yeah, it was just an outlet for me because I always have to have some outlet for my creativity and crap.
Yeah,
so.
This is probably going to make me sound like a terrible person, but
go ahead.
You know, again, I feel this way, and so I'm certain there are hundreds of other artists out there that feel this way. And that is that whenever I drew a picture, wrote a story, or something, I would immediately want to go share it with my friends. And find out what they thought about it, and I'd be shoving it in their face, going, what do you think? And the internet gave me a place where I could do that very quietly and without actually bothering anybody who didn't want to
exactly.
be bothered.
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree with that, although that kind of bites me on the butt because it makes it hard for me to advertise.
And answer the blog roll call. I chill back and relax and just let my tongue fall. It's been a while now and it needs some addressing. All the people are curious can ask him for lessons. Yeah, don't get the lyrics and they think that I'm whack. I gotta change the subject matter if I want a big crack. Don't give two shits, add on a fuck less. But I will admit my local scene shares those 2 cents. Yeah, don't look cool and I wear thick glasses. I don't have chicks up front shaking their asses. I'm an embarrassment, do you think that I care? I still with my nerd signs high up in the air. Hip-hop's supposed to be about heart, no front. So check out and slip out and fuck all that bunk. Yeah, I am who I am and I'm fucking proud of it. Wouldn't change a damn thing, still getting loving. Cypher online with homies on Skype, prepping out nerd life. That's so nerdcore. Rolling dice in his tabletop night, drinking beer by a black light. That's so nerdcore. Got an 8-bit tramp stamp tattoo. Well, girl, let me get with you. That's so nerdcore. Just do what you do until the haters do go get screwed. That's so nerdcore. I never was street, kind of hard to relate. And fuck what all those bitches are.
And we're back.
From that brief commercial break.
Yes.
Next up, I thought we would talk about the individual comic-making process. Like, how do y'all put together your comic, your actual comic bits, and what you do as far as scheduling, how often you update, how regularly you update, and all that?
Oh, man. We've made a mistake in coming back.
Yeah, we've let the dog out.
Oh, actually, I think we've...
That was smart of you.
Okay, right. Mistake remedied. So we're talking about schedules and shit.
Yes. Doug, go first.
Oh, man. You're making me go first?
Yeah.
I can go first if you want.
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. All right. I have a...
They can't see me pointing, can they?
No, they can't. Your slapstick is lost.
Right now, I have a twice-a-week thing because once I did 3 times a week, but now I'm actually trying to focus on drawing anatomy correctly and shit like that. So I'm the twice a week now because I have a regular job. I'd love to have webcomic as my job, but you can't. But I'm rambling. Okay. And pretty much, you know, I've now got a little bit of a buffer. You know, I have 2 comics in advance and I try to churn out 2 a week so that I'll keep the buffer up. We'll see how long that goes. What else am I supposed to be talking about here with the
That's pretty much it. I guess we'll start out with scheduling.
Well, what I do is I have a little notebook, a little notepad, and I draw really crappy, almost stick figure versions of every comic in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I get, like, in theory, a month ahead. I'm not quite that right now. And then that'll be the first step. Then I'll go to drawing out the individual frames. After I get them how I want, I ink them, load them up, color them, blah, blah, blah.
Well, now I'll tell you. My how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Back In the day.
In
back
the
in
day.
The Stone Age.
Back in the day.
Educate us, Sensei.
I had a little sketch pad. It was about the size of a regular sheet of paper. It wasn't a big sketch pad. And I would pretty much draw the comic exactly as it exactly full scale as it would appear in the comic. And I would do it lightly in pencil, go over, do the whole layout at first, then I'd go back and refine with pencil. And then when I was satisfied with the pencils, I'd go back. I did use a ruler to do the straight lines, but I would ink directly on that one sheet of paper, and then I would scan it in. And I would do these basically while I was in class, while the teacher was lecturing. I could get a comic. I could pencil and ink a comic a day like that.
Whoa.
The hard part was that it took me about a full day of, like, after school to color the comic.
Right.
And so my schedule when I was running was 3 days a week in a full page in color.
Wow, impressive.
And it consumed all my time. It consumed all my free time. That was my hobby, was my comic. And if you talk to a lot of webcomic professionals, that's all what they say if they're doing the, like, I'm sure people like Gabe and Taiko, that's their job.
Yeah.
But like the girl who does Devil Panties, the Devil's Panties, you know, she's doing this as a hobby. She's going to school on the side, I think.
She's out of school.
Oh, yeah, she is currently doing that as
that
her
career.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Never mind. When I last heard from her, it was she was doing this while in school. But, you know, so a lot of people end up doing it like that. And this is how I do comics now, and I have to say the way I do now looks much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a reason I don't have a webcomic now. The way I do a comic now is I still have the little individual sketch pad.
Mm-hmm.
And I will still, I'll do the proper thumbnails now. I'll draw out what I want the page to look like in a little miniature form. Sometimes with stick figures, basically just trying to get
exactly.
the general idea, the general emotions down, the major broad strokes down.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll take that out of my sketchbook, set it off to the side so I can constantly be looking at it and referencing it. And then I'll draw each panel individually. On a separate page, scan it in, do the inking in things. I actually usually don't actually render backgrounds outside of the computer because it's so hard to get straight lines just right.
I do the same thing.
I spend way more time on the backgrounds than I do on the figures, by the way.
Mm.
Figures are easy. Backgrounds are hell.
Yeah, getting the figures is pretty easy. And I do all of that on the computer. I still do it full scale, and I have to pat myself on the back and say my comic book pages are beautiful, but there's a reason that it takes me a month to produce 6 pages.
Yeah, and there are certain comics such as Lackadaisy, which will update never, or almost never, because the artist is clearly taking their time and working damn hard on making sure that they've got the prettiest goddamn page ever.
The thing is that I know we're going to probably talk about this more a little bit later, and I just kind of want to bring it up, but I just kind of want to bring it up now because it's point to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times in the webcomic industry, you have one or two people doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have one person who's doing the writing and then doing the speech balloons and doing the lettering and all that and doing all the text, the narrative side of it. And then you have one person doing all the
art side
of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, or in a lot of cases, you just have the one person doing everything. And that there's a lot of credit to that. It's a really great means, but you start to get into situations where in order to do super high-polished looking comics, it takes so much time to do that really a division of labor would be better.
Preferable.
And that's what tactile comics.
Mm.
Is that the word that I'm looking for? Like,
print?
Yeah, print. That's what print comics do, is print comics have a writer, then a penciler, and then an inker. And then a colorist, which is probably the role I would be shuffled into, and then they have a
And a letterer.
Yeah, and a letterer. And so you just end up with, while one person's doing the pencils, another person could be inking that, while another person can be coloring. And it just makes it much more assembly line and move faster.
Yeah. I have had to do a lot of that sort of thing on my own, actually, because the way I do reliquary is very similar to what everybody else does, except, unlike everyone else, like, Lee and Doug both work on single pages, on separate pages, one per panel. I work on the page, and that's it.
She's
and,
crazy.
Yeah. I do work better as in small than large, which... the standard format is to work much larger than usual. It's like 11 by 17 at least.
Yeah.
I work on... My sketch pad is 9 by 12, and I have a little measured out template that I use to...
I scan everything in at 600 DPI, because I know for print I'll shrink it down to 300 DPI. And for printing on... Well, not printing, but for web publishing, it gets scaled down to 92, and that's still really high.
I only do 300 DPI, and that's still pretty high for some people.
Yeah, yeah. I scan in at 600, but, like, I do everything except for the colors and the panel borders on the page.
Well, there's a lot of advantages to doing it that way, too. When you do it that way, like, the disadvantage to me and Lee's side, like, the reason that I have to pull the sheet out and actually look at the little thumbnail is so that I can keep in perspective of where everything's going to fit in with each other, and I do, like, a jigsaw thing. The way Sousa's describing it, she doesn't have to do the jigsaw, it's all right on the page for her, and it helps it flow much better. So it's different ways to achieve a goal.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'd like to go back to this topic of the split of the writer and the artist.
Yeah.
Because it's a very neat dynamic, but you have to have people who are both committed to the project, which is often very hard.
Yeah, and I think Eric can tell us stories about that. I thought
we said we weren't going to talk about that. No. Well, I don't know. I have a little bit different perspective and process than the three artists go through. Normally, I carry a small notebook with me, and if an idea hits me during the day, I write it down immediately. I don't care how good you think your memory is, and believe me, boys and girls, I take Latin right now, you have to memorize. you need something like that if you're a writer. Just something, because ideas are going to strike you, and you've got to have a pen and paper.
That's kind of what I did on my sketchbook. Mm-hmm. The front page would have the comic, and the back page would have, like, jotted down little notes of ideas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I wrote scripts for my artist. I would block out each panel. But I don't believe in giving exact... you don't want to sit down when you're writing a comic script for an artist and go, oh, his hand is moving directly leftwards with each finger spread in a different... and go into this super finite detail. You know, there's four cakes of dirt, each in a triangle around his eye.
Well, in some cases, that's a good thing, but for most artists, they do like a little wiggle room.
Well, yeah, you've got to block... this is what I always felt, is you've got to block it like it was a play for them. But at the same time, they can... when you say, this character facing this way is holding an item up, they can decide, you know, unless it's really important for dramatic reasons or for later reasons, exactly how he's holding it up. You know, you try to leave something in there so they can play with the creativity of it.
And also, what I've generally found in penciling other people's scripts when I had to do it in school was... it works a lot better when the writer remembers that they're the writer and the artist is the artist, and sometimes the artist knows a hell of a lot better than the writer.
And I have read not Eric's, like, this is not a problem I've ever had with Eric, but I have read other people's pencil script, you know, other writers' scripts for pencils, where they have requested to do something that is prospectively not possible.
Exactly.
Like, several actions in a single panel.
Yes.
I had a real problem with once.
And every script needs to come, every working relationship is different, but for me, every script came with,
Now tell me, read through this. Is there anything you don't think works? Is there anything that you don't think is visually flowing? Mm-hmm. Have I made characters teleport at any point where they're standing here and I'm just working with the text bubbles, so I've swapped their positions, you know? Like, I was the writer, and I wrote drew little doodles out for myself, like, not pretending they were art, but to keep in mind where is everyone while I'm doing
this. Yeah, that's definitely another good thing to do as a writer.
And the dynamic between the writer and the artist is fascinating to me, because there are some writers who literally just write a script as if they were writing a screenplay, give it to the artist, and say, turn this into whatever. And I like the sort of medium approach where you do like Eric does and, you know, let the artist draw and you give them vague pointers on what you think it should look like so they can kind of...
Yeah, you know, it's like you've got to remember whose job is whose, and it's very fine line sometimes between blocking a scene out and trying to do the artist's job for them of doing art direction. But always, you know, communication is key. Talk to the person you're working with. They're another human being. Hopefully you know them decently. And, you know, say, hey, do you not like doing this kind of thing? You know, do you not like this script? I mean, you may have written something, think it's hilarious, think it's dramatic, think it's wonderful. They think it's melodramatic. They think it's stupid. They think, you know, talk to them.
Well, I do have a question for you as far as the writer goes, because I had always, I'd wanted to start out as a writer, but I didn't think I'd ever find anyone to draw for me, so I kicked my own ass into drawing.
Well, like many people I've met.
But do you ever have times where you see there's something vital to your story or something that you really believe in, and the writer goes, I think it should be different?
The artist goes,
I think it should be different. How much pull does the artist have with like the script and things like that?
It's going to depend on an individual working relationship.
Yeah, I think that's something that varies from...
Yeah,
group to group.
My personal one was my artist almost never gave me feedback like that. She would just draw whatever I'd written down. I very rarely got feedback of that kind. How I would probably hope to deal with it is if it depends on what I'm doing. If I'm writing a gag comic, I probably don't care that much. I'm probably going to go, we don't like that gag. Okay, we'll scrap it and we'll work with another gag.
If
I'm writing a serious story, I'll probably try to work with them, try to say, you know, well, this is my goal, explain my reasons. And I don't know. It would depend on how much involvement they had had in the creation of the story, I guess.
Because
if this was, you know, if we'd done this for 2 years and let's say it was all my characters and all, you know, I had come up with the original idea and all my characters and I'd written it and I'd reached my climax and suddenly they don't want that climax anymore.
Yeah.
I might have to, you know, put my foot down and go.
That is actually kind of the thing that I've seen happen a lot. I've seen happen a lot with writer-artist pairs, is the writer comes up with the story, the writer comes up with the characters, the writer gives a, you know, fleshes these characters out, you know, the artist does draw it, but a lot of times over the course of the working relationship, the artist sits there and steps on the writer's toes so many times that the artist starts to think that they're a writer too, and then they take it from the writer.
Which is very sad because what the artist does have is
Megatokyo.
What the artist does have is the visual identities of the characters are submitted in that artist's style, so in a way they have a bit of pull there. But you'll see many webcomics where they don't give a shit about that. They'll just switch to another artist and you'll get used to it. So.
Also, many comics have artists and writers and they're being written by both.
Exactly.
You know, Penny Arcade, they fully admit all the time, we write the comic together, we sit down and create it together, you know.
Yeah, that's Lee and I are actually working on something kind of similar where we're kind of co-writing, but I'll be drawing it at some point, maybe.
I've always kind of believed in a web setting that the artist needs much more involvement in the story and the writing because they're putting so much of their personal time.
Exactly.
It's not a job, it's their... And that's the other thing, boys, if you're... Or girls, I don't know. If you're... If you're writing for an artist, take some of the load off. You know, work on the website. Do if you're any good at all with doing text, unless the person likes to do their own text with the pencils, you know, you can do the text after they've laid in the bubbles.
I'm kind of finicky. Like, I've had other people do my texting for me so that to try to alleviate some of the stress so that I could draw, and they wound up, like, moving the text bubbles. And I was so angry because, like, no, I drew this... designing the text bubble to go here.
It's gonna be individual, but do what you can for them, because I don't believe that art is harder than writing or writing is harder than art in terms of creativity, mm-hmm. but in terms of manual, you know, mule labor. Art takes more time. You're sitting there with a pen and pencil and physical thing and doing highly, you know, detailed, highly, carrying a large amount of concentration work, whereas half of counterculture got written in my head while I was dealing with customers at work. not the actual dialogue, but the creative part of it.
Yeah, so. I must say that doing the actual scripting for Reliquary is a whole lot easier than doing the artwork for it, because I'm a jerk and keep making myself do crowd scenes and exterior scenes.
Now do you do what I've seen some artists do, where you don't actually finalize dialogue until it's on the paper and it's finished, or do you write all of the dialogue beforehand and then draw the comic and then put the dialogue in?
What happens for me is that I'll write down the basic dialogue, and then I usually ignore it for a while, and then when it actually comes time to do that page, I'll start working with the dialogue, and what I do first is always put in the lettering and word balloons so that I know what to work around. And then while I'm doing that, I usually find out that, oh, wait, I don't have as much room as I thought I did, and so then I have to snip things down, cut out entire sequences, and until it's actually written down, the dialogue is kind of up in the air.
That's actually something I like doing about when I did the lettering for my comic, is because I could write a script, she could do the art, mm-hmm. it could come back to me, and I could go, no, the facial expression is not quite what I had envisioned when writing. It's a little different. Let's change the dialogue to match what's on the paper a little bit.
Or you suddenly think, oh my god, this line is so horrible, but this one over here, this one glows with the fire of beauty.
Because you always like what you've just created. You always like the child you've just had, and the one that you had a week ago is an ugly, ugly baby, and you hate
it. What was I thinking
when I created that? Oh, why did I drown that kid?
Obviously, this participle needs to go in this part of the sentence, not that part of the sentence. What a fool I was! I don't know. I was a pretty big fan of, when I was doing my old comic, of writing. I wrote down the text, and I actually did spend a long time sitting there getting the words exactly right.
Right.
But then also, once I had actually finished it, I did the same thing you guys would do, where I'd go, well, that character doesn't look as mad as I meant.
Exactly. That character doesn't look quite as angry. That character is on the other side of the panel. What were you thinking, lady? I mean, I'm sorry.
I thought of a great joke I can sneak in here, or something like that.
Yeah.
But, oh, that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did a lot of that. I did a lot where I just have the character snarkily say something off to the side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's something that my artist would actually do a lot, is sometimes she would draw a small, anime-style mm-hmm. little dialogue mm-hmm. in the corners.
Yeah.
And some of it would be really funny, and they would be like, wow, why didn't I think of that? That's great. So, you know.
Yeah. Yet another instance of where working with an artist, or at least someone else, could be awesome.
But I like what Eric said earlier, that when you're working in a pair, you really want each person to be invested, because they're really going to be putting their soul and work and mm-hmm. a lot of work into this. So
each party needs to be,
ideally.
Ideally, each party needs to put as much effort into as the other party, both manually and, spiritually. I don't want to get
creatively or whatever.
But,
put creative energy, we'll say.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on. Next, would like to know why everybody here chose webcomics, and what do you see as attractive in the web medium that you can't really get in the print medium?
Oh, that's easy.
Instant gratification?
Accessibility.
To say whatever the hell I want.
Accessibility. I, as a, you know, as a, God, how old was I?
15?
13 or 14. 14, 15, 17? Something like that.
16? No, when I was actually doing the webcomic, I was like, I was a senior.
Oh, yeah.
So
16 or 17.
Yeah, I was like 16, I was like a 16-year-old boy in high school in Alabama. You know, a 16-year-old boy in high school in Alabama, and I just wanted to draw my comic. No way was Marvel Comics going to publish whatever the crap I had to say. But I could go on the internet. And I could post my comic.
All stealth alive.
Oh, that's right. And maybe it was good. Maybe it was total shit. We didn't know, but I could do it.
Exactly. And people could read it, and if they liked it, they could keep reading it, and you could have a family.
Well, there's something to be said for a place where you can put your stuff on and target a niche market. And is this something the internet allows you to do? I wrote a comic about retail. People who worked retail instantly got a ton of my jokes that people who had never worked retail might not get.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's not very marketable in the sense of going out and putting a you know book out in the comic book stores for that, on the internet, people who worked retail could come and find me, and then the word would spread against in my market. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
My whole thing is, aside from the accessibility, which is great, I also have the feedback. I think the feedback's important, especially if you suck. Okay, I started this whole thing, and I sucked.
Hurt your ego so badly.
No. It's a journey. It's a journey, man. I started out, and I needed that feedback because, yeah, I had a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you go along, you kind of need to gauge your feedback because there's something that some people have actually done that kind of bothers me, is that they'll come up with this great idea, and the story will have a twist. No. Let me finish.
A twist,
if you want to say it. But since they have a webcomic, people have plenty of time to troll the archives, and any good writer will foreshadow. So most of the time, we'll find your twist and guess it.
And then you go, oh, motherfucker!
And what I don't encourage people to do, unless your readers point out that the twist doesn't make sense or something, I encourage you to keep that damn twist because you've been putting it in the story and you've been working on it. And I don't care if it's not going to be surprising because the fan base knows it's the reader experience that, you know. It's like that when that Marvel crossover changes their twist to something completely,
out of left field, yeah, as I recall.
So,
well, yeah, a thought out visible twist is much better than an ill thought out, I'm just randomly doing stuff.
Yes.
Space flea from nowhere.
But yeah, but readers are great and they can give you great ideas, but you have to gauge on what's an important criticism and what is them wanting
internet trolling
or them wanting what they want in your comic despite the fact that the rest of fandom isn't going to react well to it.
Well, I was going to get more into the meta of comics, but this seems like a great opportunity to go on to another subject of what are y'all's opinions on audience interaction with the comics, since you're putting it out, then immediately people can see and give feedback, and in some cases people can start doing internet criticism and all the things that entail. What have y'all's experiences with that been?
Well, it's been good and bad. Like we were just talking about, I mean, feedback is important. It helps you as an artist. It helps you as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Especially you kind of have a more personal, I think. Connection with your readership when you do it over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I got invited to a convention in Dallas. What was it? Akon?
Yeah.
Akon, is that Dallas?
Yeah, that's Dallas.
It was Akon. I was a poor college student. I still am a poor college student, but that's not the point. I didn't have the money to go. I said, hey, readers, you know, like, if you, you know, I really like to do this. Can you guys help me out? And they ponied up $600 for me to go to this convention.
Nice.
And I know that's not quite the same kind of audience interaction we were talking about, but it's still... I think it illustrates the people are more connected to your work when you're doing it over the internet than when in print. I don't know why. It just seems that way to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because you can talk to them almost instantly via a chat box or a forum.
I think the chat box, forum, give and take stuff really helps to at least have some motivational aspect for pleasing the readers, which can be a double-edged sword if you feel too much like you have to keep your readers happy and you start deviating from the point of your story. But especially for me, it helps keep me motivated to do stuff because it's like, well, two people care about this. I won't let them down.
Oh, can I tell my story?
Tell your story.
Okay, this is my story about fan interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, so I'm doing this webcomic. And some of this, because the webcomic's premise is basically like every high schooler's webcomic premise, which is me and my friends hang around and make gay jokes.
Well, until you get to that last.
Usually they're video games.
Yeah, usually it's video games on a couch. But
anyway, so me and my friends hang around and make gay jokes. And for a lot of the scenes, I had actually used segments of my house as the setting. Like, you know, it was real easy to sit there and go, okay, well, let's say we're having this conversation over by the fireplace. You know, well, these two characters are now having this conversation in my bedroom. And, you know, it gave me a real easy example from which to draw the setting.
Exactly.
Well, anyway, near the end of my comic's life, as we were moving from one house to another, you know, we were just moving across town, but we're still having to sell our house, and this family came in. This family was a military family. They move around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter came in and recognized my house from my webcomic and left a message asking if I was my internet persona.
Wow.
They ended up buying my house and she ended up staying in my room.
Holy crap.
That's pretty crazy.
That would have creeped me the heck out.
Yeah. That
she was actually really cool.
Now, there's the other end of the spectrum where I once worked at a Borders in Atlanta. And I was working in a cafe, and one day this little girl I'm working with comes up and asks me if I read comics on the internet, and I was like, yeah, I read Penny Arcade and the same comics everybody reads. And she's like, well, I read this one called Counterculture, and they had this comic about like this guy, and he's just started working in a cafe. Isn't that funny? And of course, I had just started working in the cafe, so I was like, well, you know, I write that. Girl proceeded to tell me all my own jokes the next 3 hours until my shift. What about the one word? Blah, blah, blah. I know. I wrote it. I know that joke.
Hey, do you remember that part?
Oh, and then this one time, Mike, blah, blah, blah. I know.
I wrote it.
You know, I don't know if she believed me. I ended up putting a post up on the comic that was like, oh, what was that girl's name? I can see her in my head. Black hair.
Her name is Mitzi. Mitzi.
Yeah, Mitzi now. I guess you would say, hey, Mitzi, I really do write this comic. And
I also remember the time we met somebody new at our anime club.
Mm-hmm.
And they started talking about this wonderful artist that they knew off the internet.
I was there when that happened, and I was like...
And then I just slowly turned my head and was like...
Is it One Piece? Was it the One
Piece
art?
Yeah, that was actually when I was in my big One Piece phase, and just slowly turned my head and was like, that's me. And she's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I was talking to somebody famous. And I'm like, I draw pictures of Japanese cartoon characters, usually humping each other. I don't consider this great feat.
Yeah, famous here.
I don't have any fame stories like that.
You're
just
starting out.
Sad.
You will. If you keep going, you will.
Okay. I hope I will.
Internet famous is completely different from actual famous.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta be in the right circles.
Yeah, but I don't have any sort of fame. Well, I guess I kind of do, it's nerdy. Yeah.
It's been 6 months. Give it time. Yeah. Give it time. It's been, what, 4 months? 5 months? I mean,
something like that. Yeah.
10? Whatever it is.
So, speaking on getting famous, what's everybody's experiences with advertising?
Well... Number one, you've got to sit there and track. You can't just give them one. Like, if you want people to buy advertising from you, you've got to give your metrics from, like, three different sites. Mm-hmm. Because, like, if you just use one, people will go, well, what's your backing, you know, for that data for that? And you'll give them the one. What is it? Not Netscape. What's the one that has the circle?
The circle,
blue
the star.
Circle and the star.
I use that one. God, what's it called? I cannot remember, but
and,
I use it.
Invariably, people will come back and go, well, we don't think that data is accurate from that website. So you got to give them, like, three that match up together.
Mm-hmm.
And two is, you know, to work with people that you like. You don't want to, check out the people that you're advertising for. If you're advertising another webcomic, make sure you can read the other webcomic, and it's not like, page one, so all them gays should die. That's the punchline. NASCAR rules. I mean, like, you don't want that to be the comic.
Unless you're catering to that niche,
well, okay,
in which case.
Yes, we're in that niche market.
That actually happened to me. Like,
wow, really?
As I told you, you know, my comic was pretty much me and my friends hang out and make gay jokes. Well, while... most of the time the punchline was lol gay. the characters had other personalities. Like, there was the one character that was amazingly into computer games and really good at math, and he really liked cats for some bizarre reason. And then there was the D&D nerd that really got into heavy metal and things. And then, and, you know, there was my character who kept denying that he was gay.
Like you do.
And,
especially in high school.
Yeah, especially in high school. God. But anyhow, and so I made friends with this one other webcomic artist who, you know, he started talking to me, and he was a fan, and he had a comic himself, and so he eventually talks me into co-advertising with each other. Like, he'll send his readers to my page, and I'll send my readers to his page. So I did this without reading his comic first.
Oh, not a good thing.
And I went over to actually read his comic, and I discovered that the punchline for every single thing is, lol, this character's a lesbian. Lol, this character's bisexual. Lol, this character's gay. Lol, this character's straight. And that was the only personality these characters had.
You're the guy who does Menage 3 or whatever? Like, back in high school?
I was just wondering. It's like, oh, that sounds like Archie Bujo.
Yeah, that's the guy with 3 punchlines.
That was it. That was, like, no character. They were all kinds of crazy things. Like, they were also elves and espers, and I didn't know. I lost track. I couldn't tolerate it.
You've got to pay attention to what you're doing with those, because you're telling your readers, and like I said before, like we talked about before, you know, you got a pretty close relationship with your readers if you're doing this long enough, you know, they start to really trust you, and if you go read this, buy this, do this, it's cool, it's fun. And then it turns out to be a big steaming pile of shit.
They're gonna come back at you,
and they're gonna be like, "Why trusted you?"
Now, admittedly, my advertisement for the gay elf lesbian no character comic was, "Hey, my friend does this," so it's not exactly
a full endorsement.
It's not quite the glowing endorsement of, "Oh my god, guys, you've got to read this."
I
was just gonna say that somebody actually got onto me for a comic that they liked, and apparently I had been interacting with the author and didn't know it. And I had taken them off of my links, because all of my links has to be stuff I'm reading, because if I stop reading something, it could veer in some fucked up direction.
Yeah.
And they're like, why did you take this off? This is my thing, and you took it off. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't read it anymore. So
yeah,
it's just along with what you were saying about everything.
Well, that's probably, you got to place all the parts of your website that recommend things to readers, not just the links, the advertisements, anything. And don't cover your page with banners, guys. Like, if you're in this webcomic thing to make money, you're doing it for the wrong reason.
That's an important thing. I can't tell you how many times I've been to, like, a webcomic panel, and one of the first questions that almost always gets asked is, what about marketing? You know, what about t-shirts? What about coffee mugs, you know?
That's if you're in the top 1% of all webcomicers.
That's then if you people can worry read it about and that. Like it,
you know?
Sitting on a panel, I did like 10 panels at ACON, and I think the number one question at every writer's panel was, where can I find an artist so that I can get famous? Because I need a good artist to get famous with.
Ha!
Exactly, that's the problem, and if you're going about it in that way, that's not going to help you, because, like, if you really want an artist, there are, you know, seem to be an overflow of writers. Maybe, I don't know why.
Because people think they're writers who aren't. None of our readers, our listeners, obviously. You're all creative special butterflies.
But anyways, you know, if you got the attitude, I want to be internet famous, then, you know, you
don't want to be internet famous. Let me tell you, you do not want to be internet famous.
Yeah, Doug can tell you stories. But, spine-chilling tales of terror.
Why do you think I'm going by Doug right now?
But my point is that if you want an artist, because so many people have gone, and I've seen this in so many forums, I've got a great idea, how can I get an artist for this? You need to be able to sum up be able to put out drafts that people can look at. And B, be able to sum up your story idea and quick, concisely, in a catchy way so that the artist will go, huh, maybe I will look at this instead of just going, hey guys, I gotta have an artist.
Guys, I've got the best idea ever. It's the best idea ever, and here's the entire plot of the thing. Nobody's going to read that, especially not artists, because we are lazy and distractible.
That's why we're artists.
Yes.
Now, if you do what I did, it's like, hey, there's a shiny thing over here.
Yeah.
You need to bring your pencil and a piece of paper and draw the script to see the shiny thing.
That works wonders. That works wonders. You'll be surprised. Don't tell them what the shiny thing is, just that it's shiny.
I mean, it wasn't for 3 years until the girl goes, you know, I don't think there is a shiny thing over there. But, oh god, I had something else here to add, and I've totally lost it.
What, so, maybe something about you're a writer trying to get an artist, or...
I remember now. The number two question was, when does this start making money?
Never.
Like, when does this start making money? And, you know, and look, at Akon, I actually met some fans that donated... money to get me to Akon, and a couple of them went like, so when can I on my webcomic start asking for money? I'm like,
it's like, if you're getting into this for the money, like any creative endeavor, you're in the wrong place.
Wrong place, guys.
If you want to make money, go to pyramid schemes or something like that. That's probably going to net you more money.
Seriously, I bet you could invent a pyramid scheme that involved getting artists for all the people who want to do webcomics to get money and are just writers. You can't see me making quotes around writers, but it worked perfectly. They're all that gullible.
But from what I've seen from successful people talking about it, most of your money is going to come from either donations, if you have a very generous readership, or from merchandising, which is always kind of an iffy thing.
I actually dated a guy for a period of time who did not have any illusions that he was a creative person. He was going to college to be an engineer. That's what he was going to do, and he did not think that he was in the drawings or in the writings, but he enjoyed reading webcomics all the same. Like, he didn't have to produce one to enjoy it. And his contribution was that he was going to... if he read a comic and he enjoyed it and he came back 2 weeks in a row, he would then start to donate to that artist. If they had a PayPal account out, he would donate to that artist.
Which we need more people like that.
But if you're
he also did it laughing, saying, ha ha ha, the rich engineer is feeding the poor artist. So
but we need more people like that. I mean, we need more people with money who will give it to us.
Yeah, I'm okay with nothing you've said offended me there.
Would you like me to dance for you?
Dance.
But what I see commonly, and I think it's a little bit tacky, please wait till you have a readership to start asking, putting your donate button.
In the situation of I've been invited to a convention, I don't have the money to go. You can very clearly see how obviously this person has a readership.
They're being invited to a fucking convention.
And I will say too, I offered incentives. You got into, if you donated a certain amount of money, you got a free wallpaper. If you donated more, you got
but nobody liked that wallpaper because the actual artist wouldn't draw it.
We weren't going to talk. No batch talking. We weren't going to batch that.
She wouldn't. She said no, and so I drew it, and nobody liked it because I drew it instead of the artist.
People liked it.
But the point is, if you've got a big readership and you're going to a con, yes, donating is fine. If you started on Comic Genesis and you have 12 things up, you already have a pay button asking for money, and you already have merchandise that nobody cares about.
But a total of 12 is pretty high. I've seen people who start out with
day one.
I don't actually have a comic up. I have it under construction, but you can give me money.
Really? I haven't seen that before. Like,
I've seen it here and there.
Well, I think you should at least have one comic up before you put your PayPal account. And I think you should put that PayPal account up discreetly.
Mm-hmm. 1 year for donations. 1 year. I'm serious. I really believe very, 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 very strongly in be on the goddamn internet for a year before start doing merchandise, donations, and then only do merchandise if you warrant it. And I'm sorry, if 200 people a day read you, you do not warrant merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even warrant merchandise. Mm-hmm. And how many did you say you had?
5,000 or 6,000.
Yeah.
Some people bought our merchandise. I got a few pictures of people in the hats. It was Cafe Press crap, but I mean, people bought it.
But that's a good point. You had thousands and people with hundreds are trying to sell like a line of 60 different things, and it's not going to happen.
You know, nobody ever wanted the t-shirts that I put up on Cafe Press, but I was actually amazed. A lot of people wanted posters.
Yeah, huh? the poster sold.
Yeah, like, listen, so I guess one, because, you know, whenever I go to buy, I think of...
Pleasure's cheap.
I think of buying a t-shirt, but apparently the thing to do is wait until your readership starts asking for merchandise is one major trick, and then give it to them.
Yeah, got it.
Oh, that sounds about like my tack, which is, I'm just putting up this comic. Would you please read it? And then I feel kind of surprised. I would feel kind of surprised if anybody asked for anything. So far, I don't think anybody really has.
Well, and that brings up something that's kind of I feel is important too. Is if you've got two comics, don't advertise. Don't go buy $200 worth of advertising on major comics if you've got two kind of links into the don't jump off too quickly. Word of mouth is your best friend, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, word of mouth will get you more hits than anything else.
And let me give you a tip for advertising. You know, not only what he said just applies, because if they come and they see two comics, they're not going to get a feel for what you are.
Yeah, nobody's going to come back after that.
But if you want free advertising and you read a lot of web comics and they need guest authors for them going on vacations and shit, that is a great way to get some free publicity.
Yep. 1.5K of my regular readers came from real life comics.
Like, cool.
Like, we went from 3,500 a day to 5,000 a day, like, overnight from doing a... And that stayed. Like, I think we were, like, 20,000 those couple of days, and then, like...
Yeah, of course, like, you get the huge boost in the wave starts to come down.
Yeah, like, and I, you know, like, a third of our readership was from doing that.
Dare I mention his name, Mookie of Dominic Deegan got his big break, I believe, when he did a guest comic for 8-Bit Theater.
Dominic, do we have to go into Dominic Deegan?
No. Let's not do that. We can do that on a separate podcast, maybe.
It's like the webcomic slam book podcast.
Interesting.
Dominic Deegan is popular.
You can't stop reading it.
Like a train wreck.
Well, no. Granted, I stopped reading it. I just kind of forgot about it after a while.
Yeah, actually, I sat down and read all that there was, and I actually haven't.
Oh, you did better than I did.
Well, yeah. I remember that, because I remember for like 2 weeks, every LiveJournal post was, "Oh my god, what the fuck are you doing now?" And like, I kept going, "Oh god, I don't want to click, but I have to find out."
We apologize to any Deegan fans.
Yeah, sorry for any Deegan fans, like anybody listens to
this. Y'all are used to this. If y'all like Dominic Deegan, y'all are used to it.
I mean, they have three forums, and half of each forum is comprised of people who hate the strip utterly, so...
Okay, well, yeah, so I guess now we'll wrap up any further advice for aspiring webcomickers. Mine is don't do it, unless you really, really want to publish comics on the internet. Like, if you're going, oh my god, people, please look at my comic. I want to draw comics. You want to read comics. Then that's okay. You can do that. If you're trying to do it to get popular or get laid, you're doing the wrong thing.
That's a great idea.
Oh, I'm going to start a new webcomic to get laid.
New webcomic. Get Eric laid.
You're not going to get groupies. You're not going to get money. You're going to have to, like, scramble up to people and go, please read my stuff. Here's a link.
Making a webcomic is a lot like climbing a mountain. You do it you do it for the sake of doing it because it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to... I really do think that when you make a comic, that comics are different from I've just painted an oil painting or I've just written a novel. You can paint an oil painting or you can write a novel and it be a brilliant masterpiece and you lock it away. And you lock it away so that nobody sees it until you die and then they uncover it and discover it and go, oh, this was great. But comics aren't like that at all. Comics have to live and breathe. And if you draw a comic, you have to show it to somebody. Mm-hmm. That's just how a comic works. And that's the great thing about webcomics, that you can show them to people, even if you're not the best, even if you're just starting out, even if you just randomly had this great idea that you thought would be funny, you know. You do webcomics to do webcomics.
Exactly. And also, like climbing a mountain, if you're halfway up that mountain and you jump off and start a new mountain, your readers are going to be very pissed at you.
I don't think that one quite connected, but a way that webcomics is not like climbing a mountain is generally people don't make fun of you for climbing a mountain.
That's
yeah, you don't get like the Cheetos stain on your shirt for climbing a mountain.
Not
to take it away from the mountain metaphor, I was sitting there struggling trying to work my advice into a mountain metaphor somehow, but guys, don't talk yourself out of doing anything.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, if you're doing a joke and you make yourself laugh, other people will laugh at it. 9 times out of 10, if you write a script and you think that sounds cool, other people will think it's cool. I'm not saying don't take any advice ever, but some of my best strips were ones I wrote a script, sat down and go, oh God, I'm the only one who's going to think this is funny. Like, I'm the only one in the universe who will like this. I better get rid of it. I got to get rid of it.
Your and, jokes are not as even you know, as you think they are.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, generally, if you get a variety of people who also happen to be in your target audience to look at it and go, "Her, that funny," then you're doing pretty good. If you don't really have a target audience, then you just kind of have to ignore that niggling little part that once you're in the middle of doing something, you go, oh God, this is terrible, I just need to, like, burn it all, happens to be every page.
Well, at the same time, you know, if somebody, if you have, going back to the writer-artist duo, mm-hmm. If you're a writer and you hand your artist something, and the artist looks at it and goes, this isn't funny.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and scrap it and write something else. And likewise, if you're an artist and you're giving an idea to the writer for them to write, it's retarded. Listen to the writer when he looks at you just with this blank stare and says, that's retarded.
And guys, go take art classes right now. Like, if you're young enough, you go out there. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, all you aspiring writers out there, go take art classes.
Well, I'd say that, like, an art class or two wouldn't hurt a writer if they're wanting to write for comics. Just, you know, to get the idea of at least somewhat how artists think.
I'll give a reasonable reason for it, rather than than writing sucks do art. Well,
I try to be reasonable when I'm not talking about my own stuff, which, as I said before, is generally, oh God, this is terrible, burn it.
That's what the mark of a true artist is, oh God, my own work is terrible, kill me.
Yeah.
The path of the artist is one of pain and suffering and suffering and whining about it.
And pain, suffering, and whining. You just skip over the second suffering for others in the form of whining.
Yes.
Yes. Well, and, yeah, I guess that is it. Thank you very much for listening to us ramble for however long we've rambled. And thank you, Awesome Cast, for letting us ramble on your show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And everybody check out Reliquary and Hazard's Wake, because they're both awesome.
Yes, please check out our comics and continue to read and enjoy them, I hope.
Yes!
All right, and with that, we are out.
Bye, y'all.